Well, it's good to be here in the Father's house, seeing everyone's wonderful faces. Well, all I do know is no matter what's been going on, no matter how things have been going, the Father's good.
Amen.
And He is so, so good. And it's been an incredible blessing and encouragement looking at this chapter that we're currently on. And I can't help but to realize how much the Father cares about family. Because when we go into this word and we read these names and we look at all the family that we get to be a part of, because we're grafted in.
Yeah.
I mean, some of us might have some natural Israeli going on. Y'all let me know. That's interesting. But leading up to service, I came down here about, I think, 2 hours early? Because we got a cell phone service, internet, all the above up there in Port Alphaland. So I was like trying to tie in a few little things that I've been pushing to get the answers to. And the Father's good because we got it down here. So I went down to Goshen to get what I needed. The Father provides. That's part of His preservation and provision. So tonight's goal, we're going to take a deep dive in the names. And you're like, Brother Rob, you mean them 70 names right there in that chapter? Yes. Has it been condensed tremendously? So that way, for time's sake, and a lack of just mundane repetition, it's been condensed. But there's a beautiful message about the Father's provision in the very names that's listed there. And I was excited. Just like the first time I got to do this with that Tadult message, and I checked the date, which was almost exactly a year ago, that I got to do that part with the genealogy of Yeshua. And that's actually in here too. I'm going to reshare that. But it's beautiful. It's beautiful to look at the Hebrew name because we know in their culture, in the culture that we're immersing ourselves into and looking at, when it came to naming someone a name, it came with great weight and consideration of what they could potentially be overcoming, or respect for an elder or an ancestor. Because respect in those terms, in that area, was very important for them to understand according to how the Father operates. But let's take ourselves for the reading of Scripture to verse 1. And we're going to make our way to verse 8 before we dive in. Now, I'm sure I can make it to verse 8 in no time. And Israel set out with all that he had, and came to Beersheba, and slaughterings to the Elohim of his father Yitzhak. And Elohim spoke to Israel in visions of the night, and said, Yaakov, Yaakov. And he said, Here I am. He was available and took action. Something that was very profoundly touched on again in Bible study Wednesday night. And it was a big encouragement. And I wanted to share that real quick. I also wanted to let Granny know that it was a big encouragement to hear her say how whenever it comes to those 2 a.m. calls by the Father, that she instantly goes into prayer. And that of itself is taking that action. Whenever you are willing to say, Here I am, you make yourself available, then he calls you at 2 in the morning. You make yourself available because he's got something for you. And prayer is so needed. But let's continue. Verse 3, and he said, I am the El Elohim of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Mishraim, for I shall make you there into a great nation. I myself am going down with you to Mishraim, and I myself shall certainly bring you up again. And let Yosef put his hand on your eyes. And Yaakov rose up from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel brought their father Yaakov. and their little ones, and their wives, and the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to transport him. And they took their livestock and their property which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and came into Mishraim, Jacob and all his seed with him, his sons and his sons' sons, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his seed he brought with him to Mishraim. And these were the names of the children of Israel: Jacob and his sons who came into Mishraim. Reuben was Jacob's firstborn. And we're going to pause there for a moment, because that word names is H8034, is Shem. And we know the book of Exodus is also referred to as Shemot, which is names in the plural. But what's important is to realize what it means in its Hebrew understanding, because it's more than just a name. I mean, I'm the third Robert. I'm not Robert the third. I'm the third Robert, because it's a family tradition to change the middle name. You got James, Ray, and Christopher. And I got Christopher. So I'm Robert Christopher. And you know, that was just something that came from tradition, from the families. But whenever it comes to the Father and his covenant language and his word, it has great depth to it. It has deep purpose and meaning, which some of us might have that whenever it comes to our names and the handing down of them. But it's an appellation, a mark or memorial of individuality. Implication is honor, authority, character. And in ancient Hebrew, the shin and the mem, is breathe, breath, desolate, the wind or breath of someone or something is its character. You know, of course, instantly I was reminded of the song that we sometimes sing. It's your breath in our lungs, we pour, you know. And then we got to realize when we're singing that, we're not literally just, not only just talking about the actual physical breath that he provides for us so that way we can live, but we should be breathing in and breathing out his character. We should be taking hold of that and allowing that to make sure that's what we got. I remember a while back, I kind of made a mention whenever it came to dealing with that word, Shem, names, is that we could tell when we have bad attitude, the Father also is telling us that we got bad breath. So we don't want to make sure that we're walking around making anybody feel uncomfortable because of bad breath. He wants our character right, is all I'm saying. Let's see. And then it's also referring to section A and, which is breath, desolate. Hebrew names are words given to describe character. The breath of a man is character. What makes one what he is. The name of an individual is more than an identifier, but a descriptive of his character or breath. And it's used to identify another place. It refers to the sky, as in the sense of the place where the winds dwell. It also deals with aroma. A sweet aroma that is carried on the wind or breath. And of course, I thought that was interesting, being that what we learned about the two trees and how they emit a certain type of aroma. We want to make sure that we're checking all the boxes whenever it comes to reflecting the Father and his character. So going into this, I was praying to the Father before service. There's a lot of times where whenever I have my notes set in a certain order, I allow myself to believe that's the expectation. Well, the Father dropped it on me last second just to rearrange the order of the process. So originally, we were just going to go right into the names and then deal with three certain things that we have to deal with whenever it comes to this certain section that can potentially bring up argument of situations. And just to put it out there and be front and forward about it, it usually, in most cases, comes from the Islamic faith, whenever they want to challenge your understanding or challenge the word of Almighty Yah. And I actually was reminded of a situation where I was in that exact situation. You know, there was a point in time where I thought, well, that's only for people that's going to be on, you know, the debate stages or so on and so forth. No, it could literally happen at a shipyard, Tom's Shipyard, to be exactly honest. And you're going to be tested in that moment. Are you going to answer well? And so this is going to be in regards to those certain sections that have questioning behind them. But I'm going to share that. I'm going to share that in regards to why we have to be good students of the word. We have to make sure that we're sharp and ready for an answer in any given moment. But I remember I was at Tom's Shipyard where we're putting together a dredge barge. It was my first one and my last one. That doesn't mean I messed anything up. It just means I'm obviously not doing that anymore. But my brother was there also. It's me, my brother, and I wish I could remember the young man's name, and then Chris. And Chris's belief system is Islam. He follows the Quran. And he's a bit on the aggressive side about things. And I'm not saying all Muslims reflect that, but he did. Me and my brother are in the engine room, just cranking away at the different things they told us to tighten up, get going, letting the muscle heads do what the muscle heads do. And I could hear, in the distance, a little bit of talking going on with the quiet young gentleman that had his cross necklace on with Chris. Chris was going on about how Allah is superior, about how these certain things do not line up whenever it comes to that young man's fate. And I really wish I could remember his name. But he was real quiet, soft-spoken, and he was just like, bro, I just love Jesus. Leave me alone. Like, I'm just trying to work. Like, leave me alone. My brother just kept looking at me, and I kept looking over at them. I kept looking over at them. He's like, you can go over there and talk, aren't you? I was like, absolutely. Absolutely. And I went over there and introduced myself, and I said, how you doing, Chris? He's like, I'm doing great. I'm sharing the one true religion, the one true. And then he kept pushing that. I was like, well, I believe our friend over here, he's a Christian, he's a follower of Christ. I said, I also follow Yeshua. And he paused at me and looked at me like that. Looked at me, saw the Zizis, heard the Hebrew. It's Yehoshua. And I was like, damn, that's absolutely right. But it's no different also whenever you say Joshua or Josh. So I was just saying a shortened version. He's like, okay. But I'm telling you, just like I was telling him, Allah, Muhammad, and I was just like, slow down. I got one question for you before we start off on this journey. I said, doesn't it say in the Quran that the Torah and the gospel are messages of light and they are true and they should be reflected upon? He's like, yeah. And in chapter 5 of Surah, I was like, okay, so with that being said, then whenever Yeshua said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and nobody shall get to the Father except by me, no other way, not Muhammad, not Buddha, not whoever. I said, I want you, since you are so ready to teach me and help me understand that whenever it comes to that simple application to the Quran. He got mad. He got mad. But it was the truth. I saw someone literally getting beat up on that was probably just not that well taught or haven't had the time yet to develop a level of understanding to be able to have that moment. What Chris didn't know, 2 years prior, and with all the teaching that we've received, I've also got invited to go down to that Baptist church all the way across from the Dollar General in Venice one time. Because there was a guest speaker, and his name was Usama Daduk. What a name, right? We're talking about names. That's a name. He's an Egyptian man that was raised in a Muslim and Christian home. Never got the opportunity to ask how that happened, but it was their situation. And trust me, I wasn't judging in any way, shape, or form. It's just you think, like, wow, that's interesting. But the man could speak Arabic, Hebrew, German, English, and it was an enjoyment to speak with him. But he also carried a 45 with him whenever he preached services. And I was like, I said, you bring both swords with you, huh? He's like, my friend, where I go, you need them. I was like, okay. Okay. But he was in the arena of debating. And this isn't, I mean, unfortunately, we saw what could happen in America with Charlie Kirk. But the most common places where he would go was in the Middle East. So if that's what he needs, that's what he needs. But the reason I brought him up is because it's impressive, because sometimes we say we just don't know enough. Sometimes we say, oh, there's no way, there's no way. When you get put in a situation and you allow the Spirit to do what it does, whatever information that the Father has poured into you, that you have allowed to be poured into you at any given moment and point in time, the set apart Spirit will deliver it to you right at the moment that you need it. Because it wasn't like I was going on a mission, teaming up with Usama to go on and debate across the world and all so on and so forth. So I wasn't diving into the Quran. I wasn't diving into all these extra things. But right then and there in that moment, the Father just, there you go. And look, lo and behold, as the workday went forth and Chris Zimmer down, he told me a story. He told me a story about why he converted. Converted to Islam. So when he said that, I was like, oh, okay. So what happened? Well, he's like, man, I'm telling you, I believe it was a sign. I was walking on a lock system. I forget which lock system, he said, but it was obviously a big one. And the water was raised up, and he was walking on the side, and he fell in. And it freaked him out, which, let's be real, if any of us fell into a lock system with a boat, a big vessel next to us, it'd be pretty freaky, pretty scary. And whenever he popped up, and he was gasping for air and looked up, said the name of the boat was Jesus Saves. And I said, well, why would that push you in a direction away from him? I said, in your moment of distress and potential drowning, you look up, that's the first thing you see. I would have took that as a sign. I need to draw near to him and be on that boat. Especially if your life was heading in the wrong direction, as he told me, with all the other details, I'm gonna spare those. And he just paused, he took a deep breath and breathed out. He was like, well, as where I stand, I cannot be convinced otherwise. I said, well, as we stand, let's respect one another and just get the job done before Tom number one comes over here and karate kicks us in the head. And anybody that knows Tom, he likes to tell everybody he's number one. And he likes to show people. I've never had any issues with him. But, you know, I brought that up because it's some things that the Father brings back to memory whenever it comes to dealing with his word. And that there's some things in here that, yeah, it was challenging and time-consuming. And I mean, also another thing, for Bible study, I was sharing with Pastor the different things I was looking at. I mean, I got so cross-threaded that I was explaining what I saw to him as we were originally talking about the numbers situation with Benjamin's family, which we're going to see. I was getting it mixed up with the LX Septuagint with the extra five. And I was like showing him, I was like, no, you see, it's actually Yosef's sons, Yosef's grandsons. And then, like, as I'm going home, it was like everything was sort of like slowing down in my mind, going over everything. I was like, I'm glad Pastor's patient, because he's probably like, what is this dude talking about? He must be getting something mixed up. But, you know, and I thought that was funny to share. But when it comes to being a student of the Word, and you feel like you're on a time restraint sometimes, you just got to learn to take a deep breath, slow down, and trust the process, because the Father will make all sense of it. So I thought that'd be funny to share. But for the sake of time, let's start getting the ball rolling on this. Because I'm telling you, it is absolutely worth, whenever it comes to the translation message, we'll title it that, of the names. But let's deal with those key topics first. And for us to do that, we're going to take our time going through this. So with verse 9, it's time to break out the phone book. We're getting the names ready. And the sons of Reuben were Hanok and Paul, Hetzron, Kamri. And the sons of Shimeon were Yemiel, Yamin, and Oded, and Yakin, and Zohar, and Shaul, son of a Canaanite woman. And the sons of Levi were Gershon, Kohath, and Moran. So this is going to be an area we're going to take a moment to, because it's got something that'll make you question. But it says, verse 12, and the sons of Yehuda were Ur, and Onan, and Shelach, and Peretz, and Zerah. But Ur and Onan died in the land of Canaan, and the sons of Peretz were Hetzron and Hamiel. Now, we're going to take what was considered. I'm going to go, and you can go too if you want to verse 27 of this chapter. Because it says, and the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Mishraim were two beings. All the beings of the house of Jacob, it says, all the beings of the house of Jacob who went to Mishraim were 70. So that being considered, we know, other than Joseph and the four with him, his family unit, there would be 66. And like a cuckoo person, I counted this so many times that I'm just thankful that we made it to 70 whenever it came to the amount of times I counted it, just to be sure. And then I prayed to the Father, well, if Ur and Onan died, but yet still count it in this census, in this telling of the family, this family tree, there has to be something in your word. There has to be something that allows it to make sense. Now, these things have been widely debated amongst scholars, amongst people that have, it's their entire life. So bear that in mind, because what I was reminded of, and we don't have to go there, but there's some interesting stuff in the Torah when it deals with a certain situation that took place during this time when they died. Because chapter 38 deals with Judah and Tamar and this entire situation whenever Judah was going out and about, because there was a whole situation after what they did to Yosef, after them deciding to basically take things into their own hands, Judah decided that he was going to go out and make his own wealth, establish his own situations in the land of Adullam. Met an Adullamite, got acquainted with the people of the land, took a wife, had these three sons that are listed here, because we know the other two is with Tamar. And as we know, as the story goes, Tamar is Judah's daughter-in-law. Which, of course, because Ur was evil in the eyes of Jehovah, it just simply says he took his life. Ur would also been someone of the land, which Judah was never supposed to intertwine with, to have children with, and to begin with, as we know. And then, of course, Deuteronomy chapter 25 speaks about the Levirate marriage law, that whenever someone's husband dies, it is the duty of the brother-in-law to continue the family line if they have not had any children yet. And if he refuses, it was a public humiliation. He'd go before the elders, the judges. They would remove his sandal, spit on him, and that he would obtain that title as one that disrespected his brother's house. With that being considered an end in mind, because Onan decided to spill his seed on the ground instead of continuing the bloodline. The father saw that was evil. Same situation for Onan. Yehuda, just like, okay, Tamar, well, you're a widow, but I'm going to put you on reserve until Shelah is old enough. But of course, Tamar got the inclination and knew that she had to take action. Because this was not Tamar's fault. And we got to remember the bloodline that Tamar comes from. Tamar comes from, she is a descendant from Shem's household. And for the sake of time, I'm not going to do all the pieces, but I'm so thankful that I'm remembering all this, because this is just the scriptures. I asked the Father if he wants me to go there. It's gonna go. Praise Yah. Given the backdrop of this situation and considering what was taking place, Yehuda, being deceived by Tamar, because Yehuda was busy going down to the sheep shearing fest, as we learn, probably listening to, hey, good looking, what you got cooking, having a little one too many, and on his way back through a certain town, at a certain spot, at a certain place, Tamar was in disguise, was able to deceive him, and obtained his staff, the robe, and a signet ring as a pledge. And then, as we know how the ending goes, her life is spared. Yehuda is humbled. And I believe that's the huge turning point in his life, and making sure that he grows closer to the Father. And then ultimately we see that character change throughout the process of what we're looking at right now. Because there's some things that are coming up and up and forth for Yehuda that really shows that genuineness of what it looks like when someone actually starts taking the Father seriously. Because sometimes we might ask the Father, how long? How long am I going to keep doing this? How long am I going to keep struggling in this one sin? How long is it going to take for me to get to where I need to get to? Are you sure? Are you sure, Father? I'm a mess. It all begins with how serious we want to take him. It all depends on us if we want to seek that self-discipline. But being with all that being said, when it comes to and Onan, now if anybody else has any other explanation, I'm more than welcome and open to it. Or count it, because their bloodline continues through the Levirate marriage, even though it's their father in that certain circumstance, they can still be accounted for. Because it's all about preservation of life. That's the whole point of the Deuteronomy 25, is not to get caught up in the crazy part, the public shaming part, because out of all the places in Scripture I could have been asked a question about at work, one of the tool room sermon areas, Deuteronomy chapter 25 was brought up. But what do you think about this? I said, you're getting too caught up in what seems like the unnormal because of the cultural differences, but you're missing the spiritual application of the fact that it's the continuing and respect of life for that household. It's all about the continuing and respect of life. Whew. That takes care of Judah. And the sons of Peretz were Hetzron and Hamuel. And the sons of Yisachar were Tola and Puach and Yob and Shimron. And the sons of Zebulun were Sered and Elon and Yahael. These were the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob and Padan Aram, with his daughter Dinah. all the beings, his sons and his daughters were 33. And the sons of God, Gad, were Siphion and Haggai, Shunai, Ezbon, Eri, Adorai, and Areli. I'm sorry, I got to bring this up real quick. A while back, Sister Connie sent to a group of the speakers, and I just came back to memory, and it was a meme where this dude was like sweating bullets. And it says, when it's your turn to read names. When it's your turn to read the name as a speaker. And you feel it, because I guarantee you, the Father's grace is that we don't have a fluent Hebrew speaker here. Because he'd be like, what in the world? What did he say? Oh, goodness. Oh, yeah. We're going to be speaking it fluently one day. And the sons of Asher, Yimnah and Yeshua, and Yeshuai and Beriach and Serach, their sister, and the sons of Berai, Heber and Malikel. These were the sons of Zilpha, whom Laban gave to Leah his daughter, and these she bore to Jacob 16 beings. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Joseph and Benjamin, and to Joseph in the land of Mishraim were born Manasseh and Ephraim, whom Asnath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. And the sons of Benjamin, Bela and Becher and Ashbel, Gera and Naaman, Ehi and Rosh, Muppim and Huppim, or Hupim, and Ard. These were the sons of Rachel who were born to Jacob, 14 beings in all. This is going to be another area that we're going to pause in. And I'm going to just attest to it. For me personally, it's definitely taken growth and patience, because I found different understandings, different variations. And by the end of it, I asked the Father, what is the easiest way? Because I'll look with the easiest way to explain this. Now, this definitely is something that deserves a lot of time and attention, but it would end up being a service of its own. So I have this in my notes in regards to it, because some of you are probably like, okay, brother, get it. Where are you going with it? No problem. There is a listing, and you don't have to go there. I'll give it to you if you want to read it on your own time, or so on and so forth. But it's in Numbers 26, 38 through 41. And I'm going to read, let's see, one moment, 26, 38 through 41. Here we go. Oops. Yeah. Okay. Numbers 26:38-41. It says, sons of Benjamin according to their clans of Bela. And keep in mind, what's important is it's using clans, because that's going to be a key giveaway. Because each genealogy reading is usually in regards to a certain set of historical documentation or what's taking place in that moment. In Yosef's situation, whenever he's reading it, and you have the 10 sons, and some are grandsons, because that's the way the listing of, because the sons' sons. But in that particular section that we're looking at, is almost like a manifest. Because you think about it, they're traveling, and this is their current situation. This is in regards to establishing clans. But it says, clans of Belach, the clan of the Belites, of Ashbel, the clan of the Ashbelites, of Achim, Hirim, the clan of the Hamorites, of Shepham, and the clan of Shephamites, and Chupam, the clan of the Chupamites. And the sons of Belach were Ard and Naaman, and Ard of Ard, the clan of Ardites of Naamin, the clan of the Naamanites. These are the sons of Benjamin according to their clans. And their registered ones, 45,600. So, the other two listings, if you want to put it in your notes, you can put them. I'm not going to go to them and read them, but I'm going to use that as the launch pad to explain where the argument usually comes from. So we'll just use the numbers account right here to give you all for your notes. The other two accounts to look at is 1 Chronicles 7:6 and 1 Chronicles 8:1-2. And whenever you're reading the names there, it's a different amount. And that's usually the argument. Is that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Only 7 were listed in a numbers account, because if you're adding the clans from Belah, it's 7. But it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 listed if you don't include those clans. He obviously has 10 that's listed in Genesis. The number one thing that usually revolves around these, and I'm more than willing to share the notes, so that way, if it's just you want to directly look at it, just get straight to the point and see it. But the number one argument usually is, and it's not just from Islamists, it could be from atheists or anyone that opposes the Bible, is you see, it doesn't line up. It doesn't line up. It says here that he has 10. It says here that he has 5. It says here that he only has 4. So you tell me, what's that about? You just look at the context and take your time through it, you realize that it's a certain point in time that there was a certain thing that they were establishing. In Chronicles, it's going to be historical, probably war-related. In the Numbers account, it is literally the establishing and the reestablishing of clans. Not every son that is of the 10 is going to be listed, because there's certain things that happened over time that, whether that clan had either died off or something happened to where they were not needed to be listed in that general census for that given time and moment. It's usually a surrounding historical situations and documents. But I'm just giving these in case, because you really never know. You never know when you might be presented with this. Well, I know you're a believer, I know you read what you read, but tell me about this. What do you think about this? It's one of those situations important for us to have. And trust me, that's the fast version of dealing with it, because it's something that you can go really deep into. Let's go back to our text in Genesis 46. We're going to resume on the easiest one to translate, the quickest one to translate, verse 23. And the son of Dan was Shechem. And the sons of Naphtali, Yatzael and Gunai, and Yetzer and Shelim. These were the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel his daughter, and she bore these to Jacob 7 beings in all. All the beings who went with Jacob to Mishraim, who came from his body, besides Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 beings in all. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Mishraim were 2 beings. All the beings of the house of Jacob who went to Mishraim were 70. And this is going to be the last part whenever it comes to those things that we could be potential areas of being challenged. Let's make our way to Acts chapter 7, verse 14. If y'all take a moment to read that, because this is Stephanos, we should be very familiar with this chapter because it's such an impactful moment. Because the previous chapter, there were 7 that were called into servitude. And Stephanos, with great courage, great faith, in his time of departure, before his departure, recalled the entirety of scriptures in such a masterful and beautiful way. But this also could be a challenging thing, because I'm sure some of you probably already read it. Because it says, and Joseph, this is Stephanos recalling, the scriptures. It says, and Joseph sent and called his father Jacob and all his relatives to him, 75 people. And you kind of get in there and you're like, well, you know, scripture is not supposed to contradict itself. It doesn't. This is a simple translation situation whenever it comes to dealing with the Masoretic text, which is the Hebrew writings of Scripture, and the LXX Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Scripture. And this, once again, dealing with genealogy, dealing with names, there's going to be variances, there's going to be differences for multiple reasons, historical documentation. The simple answer to this, and to me this was the easiest one to answer on why the difference is simply that the LXX Septuagint lists a 5 additional family members that come later into the picture, because it's all about who's in Mishraim at a certain point in time and place. Those names, I'm going to give them to you right now. And they come from Ephraim and Manasseh. But those names is Machir, son of Manasseh, Gilead, son of Machir, thus Joseph's great-grandson, Sethulah, son of Ephraim, Tahan, son of Ephraim, Iran, son of Sethulah, thus Joseph's great-grandson. And like I said, I'm more than willing to airdrop send so you can review and look over and see. But that is something that I took a moment and just pondered and considered. Because Stephanos, being the apostle that he was, will more than likely have been trained up and taught according to the LXX Septuagint, the Greek translations of the scriptures. So that would have been the main reason why that was inserted in that part of the text, is because he would have been quoting simply from the LXX Septuagint, which doesn't null and void anything that the Masoretic Hebrew text gives us in the translations that we use whenever it comes to the Old Testament. And it's something that we should definitely hold on to as ammunition for when the time is needed. So now for the fun part, y'all. I'm thankful that y'all are bearing with it. It's, I can tell you right now, not always the easiest task whenever it comes to teaching on names. And especially, and I told Brother Scott, I was like, brother, when I did Yeshua's genealogy, it took me, I think, 3 days just to accurately get the names and their translations and prayer and fasting whenever it came to seeing the message behind it. Because I didn't want to just go in there acting like it's a chop shot and I'm trying to get a catalytic converter off of a vehicle and just say, well, there you go, that's what you got. No, this is the Father's word and it deserves time, respect, and attention. I mean, we're on a time limit here. Imagine the hours in consideration and being so thankful of what the message says behind it. So each name, and I'm going to leave it up to y'all how y'all want to follow along, but I am going to start back to the first name. And these 70 names, it's going to be 70 because it's going to be only dealing with what we consider the heads, because it's a cultural respect. Because naturally, there would have been way more than 70 people going on this journey. You consider the wives, some had multiple wives, some had concubines, so on and so forth. You think about what took place in Shechem. They would have had tons of people with them. So the 70 is to signify the heads and ruling authorities of the households. So I'm going to just go through this, and I'm going to let y'all know some of them are Strongs, some of them are Brown's Drivers Briggs. But I'm not giving the Strong's numbers. I'm not giving the Briggs numbers. I'm just giving the translation for sake of time. And I'll leave it up to y'all if y'all want to look at that. Reuben, behold a son. Hanak, dedicated. Palu, distinguished. Hezron, surrounded by a wall. Camri, my vineyard. And I'm going to give the translations per family, and then we're going to read the entire translation after. So dealing with the household of Reuben. Behold a son, dedicated and distinguished, surrounded by a wall of protection in my vineyard. You're going to notice each translation points to the Father's provision and preservation of life. Yeah. It's so beautiful. Simeon, heard. Jemiel, day of God. Yamin, right hand. Ohad, united. Shachin, he will establish. Zohar is tawny, or whiteness. I want y'all to think whenever it comes to tawny, it's this bright, orangish, whitish color that represents glowing, and it also represents a change of garments. That one had to take a little extra look at, because when you get a word like tawny, you got to figure it out. Saul or Shaul is desired. This translation is, who heard the day of Jehovah at the right hand, who united and will establish whiteness, white garments, as I so desire. This is also because it also speaks of our Messiah. Levi is joined to Gershon, exile, Kohath, assembly, Merai, bitter. And it says, who I join to you in exile, assembling you in your bitterness. And when you think of the things that are to come, because this is the beginning process of a prophetic word given to Abraham about his descendants being slaves in the land for 400 plus years. Mm-hmm. The Father never leaves us, nor forsakes us. Even in our bitterness, he is with us. He is joined to us. We just have to be patient through the time and process. Yehuda, Judah, is praised. Awaken, Onan, strong. Shelach, a petition or a request. Perez, breach. Zerah, rising. Hezron, surrounded by a wall. Hamuel, spared. This translates, give thanks and praise that I awakened the strong one who makes petition, who breached through and rose up into my surrounding walls, has spared you. You think and take into consideration Yosef's life and journey, how representative it is of Yeshua. Came as that humble servant who breached, broke forth, raised up, entered into the walls of the Father's care, and intercedes on our behalf, spares us on our behalf. Issachar, there's recompense, or which means he will bring a reward. Tola, this one could be an interesting one. It takes a little time to look into this one because it just says worm. Say worm. How in the world are you going to get worm? What you mean? You got to look at the root, because it refers to the crimson worm. Crimson. It was a specific type of worm that was crushed for its dye and certain practices. So then you remember that, you think about that. Well, okay, now I get it. It's representing the one that was crushed on our behalf, for us, to cover us. Puah. Or Puvah is splendid. Job, persecuted. Shimron, watch height, which means guardianship, to watch over. That translation, there shall be a great reward from the crimson worm, the one crushed for us. Magnificently splendid, the persecuted one provides his guardianship. It keeps referring. And this is, you listen to it, it's all about provision. Provision, provision, preservation. I was so thankful that that was established so that you could see these things. Zebulun is exalted. It could also mean habitation. They go coincide together. Sered is fear. Elyon means terebinth, mighty. Yahel is God waits, or the expectant of God. To expect of God. exalting a habitation set apart in reverential fear, the mighty tree in which Yah waits by with expectation. And we can see that just like, even though they're entering into Goshen, there is a promised land that they are in there later on. Generations are to go and take hold of. In the same way that the Father has a habitation that's been exalted, that's been prepared, that's going to be married to the new earth and be the new heaven, and is being prepared for us. And the Father is waiting for that day with expectation. Gad is troop soldiers, Ziphon, the lookout or watchtower. Haggai, festive. Shuni, fortunate, which also means rest. Esbon, hasting to discern, I will be enlargement. Eri is watchful. Erudai, I shall subdue, I shall roam. Arli, a lion of God, means heroic. This translates, his soldiers look out over his festivals, giving restful fortune to the ones hasting to discern the observations of him. For them, he shall subdue and shall roam as a lion of Yah. There's blessings that come with the feast days that we observe and watch over, because it's also part of the covenant that we have agreed to walk in with the Father. Let's move to Asher. We're almost there, y'all. Asher equals happy. Imnah, right hand. Ishu, he will resemble. Ishai, or Jesu, he resembles me. Berai, with a friend. Eber equals comrade, or community, could also mean that. Malkiel, my king is God. It says, my happiness comes from the right hand that will resemble me, for he does resemble me. With a companion, he extends the community of our king, Jehovah. Joseph, as Jehovah has added. Manasseh, causing to forget. Ephraim, double ash heap, I shall be doubly fruitful. Since Jehovah has added to our life, causing sorrows to be forgotten and blessing us with double the fruit, which could be simply meaning blesses us with an increased understanding and knowledge of the fruit that we should walk in. Benjamin, son of the right hand. Well, this one's, all right, y'all. It's chuckle territory in a second. But Belah is destruction, and that's not the chuckle territory. That's a pretty intense name. But you got Becher, young camel. And I sat there for a moment. I was like, Benjamin named his son Young Camel? Why does that sound like a Middle Eastern rapper's name? You're this young camel. Come and take a ride. So I took a minute. And I was like, Father, what? Everything was flowing and going. And it was like, wow. But we got young camel. You got destruction and young camel. I mean, Benjamin's Children almost sounds like an entire album CD for like 90s greatest hits. I was like, what's going on? But when you look closer into what young camel is, the dromedary, the type of camel that it was referring to, or the type of species that represented it. A dromedary, it's about what it resembles, because we know that animals can resemble character. So I can tell you right now, Breacher, that dude was a runner. That little guy must have been taking off running and racing and doing all the things. Because it says that a dromedary is an Arabian one-hump camel, especially one of light and swift breed trained for riding or racing. And I was like, okay, Father, that makes sense. It resembles swiftness. Young Camel was swift. He liked to run. We're never going to forget Young Camel. Let me find out there's actually an artist out there. let's continue. Ashbel, a man in God. And this is like, it's kind of interesting how this one flows right here. Because it says a man in God. It says a man of Baal, fire of Baal, I will make a path. It also means flowing of blood. Whenever you look at the Strong's and you break it down in that direction. Gira, a grain. A grain, it can represent currency. Remember we learned about the gyros. Naaman, pleasantness. Ehi, my brother, could represent brotherhood. Rosh, represents head. Mopem, serpent. Hupen, protect it. Ard, I shall subdue. This translation. The son of the right hand brings destruction swiftly. I will make the path of blood. I will pay the price of pleasantness, my brothers. The head of the serpent, protect the canopy, I shall subdue. That is something that's interesting because it speaks of the righteous judgment when Yeshua comes and sets straight of those things that are going to take place later on. Oh, this is the easiest one, the quickest one, I should say. Dan, a judge, Husham, who makes haste. Yehovah is the judge who makes haste. And considering the previous, what we just read, we know that the authority that Yeshua is driven by is the judge, the Almighty Yehovah. And he will make haste. Naphtali means wrestling. Jahzeel, God divides. Gunai, my defender. Jezer, forming. Shalim, repaid. This is an encouragement. Because we're also at name number 69, so naturally we got more name to add in there, and that's Israel. So Israel means he will rule as God. Or it means God prevails, speaking of his majesty. But that translation, the final translation, is in our wrestling with God, he divides us from ourselves as our defender molding us into the redeemed house of Israel. And that, if I don't know anything, is encouragement upon encouragement. Because you remember at the beginning of this, it said, whenever he referred to Yaakov, he said, Yaakov, Yaakov. And just take a minute and realize and remember constantly that everything that you may be going through or have been through or even what could potentially be on the horizon, it's all because the Father wants to develop our character. And he wants us to know that in that process of developing our character, he's with us. He's never left us. He's never forsaken us. There's been so many times where we probably felt down and out and the enemy's been darting our little head and going, you see, you're just a sinner. Where's your blessings? Where's your protection? Where's your this? Where's your that? So on and so forth. Shut it. This is for me. We even praise him in saying, in the lowest valley, we'll bless his name. We'll praise his name. Now, I'm just going to go ahead and share, because we got probably just enough time to do this. I'm so excited, because if y'all haven't heard it yet, or it's just been long enough to not remember it, there's an incredible deep translation in Matthew chapter 1, the genealogy of Yeshua. I'm going to leave it up to y'all to go and read the names. I'm just going to give the translation. And if anybody wants my notes, it'd be a lot quicker to read the names because they're already done, laid out. But this is Yeshua's genealogy and the translation of the names provided. And this took some time, a lot of time. Considering because it begins with Abraham and goes all the way down. It translates, the father of the multitude laughs. You think about exalted father, Abraham of the multitude, exalted father of the multitude, laughs. Yitzhak, it means laughter. Okay, I said y'all could do the rest, but these are coming back by memory. The father of the multitude laughs at the heel catcher, Yaakov, and celebrates the breaking forth of his rising light that will erect his courtyard kingdom. From on high, freeing his people from the enchanter while promoting him, referring to Yeshua, with his strength, Jehovah's strength, proudly serving the self-existing one, with burning passion, he peacefully sacrifices himself for a people that enlarges the Father in worship of Yah, curing us through his judgment, and his son being raised will show us Jehovah's might and perfection. And the one who possesses Yah's strength, we once forgot the creator of our foundation, but Yah will establish a flowing away from confusion and self-seeking. The Elohim of raising up is helpful and just. Yah will raise with praise. Help us with the gift to supersede death by adding the one who rebels against sin, Yeshua Messiah, Yah saves. I will never forget how much time and effort that took. And I remember being so nervous whenever I shared that message, because it deals with names and it feels like I'm trying to preach out of a phone book. But guess what? If the Father tells you to preach out of a phone book, you get them numbers ready and you start preaching out of a phone book. But the crazy thing is, something like that or something like this can take hours, hours and hours. And to come here and to reverentially ask him and beg for petition to help me get through it in a way that's going to resonate and that's going to stick and take hold of your people. Because this isn't about me fulfilling what it is that I have going on in my life. This is about me serving him to serve you. Because you remember, you know, he brings back stuff from memories. And I don't know if this is a closing or not, but I remember when I was in high school. Y'all think I was quiet when I first came here. I was even quieter there. As quiet as can be. To myself as can be. Long hair. Don't care. Minding my business. I was in economics. And there was just something. And maybe now I'm just realizing maybe it was a spark or a teeny, teeny glimpse into where I'm at now. But it was an opportunity for people to volunteer to run for class president. Specifically economics class president, not, you know, anything major. And you got to write speeches. But the part of the assignment was that you had to look up certain historical figures and learn from them and what they had taught. What a combination, Martin Luther King Jr. and JFK. That's what I chose. That's what I chose. And if you know history, it didn't end well for them. And lo and behold, it didn't end well for me, even though it was rigged. And I'm not just saying that because I lost. I went looking in the trash can. And she let the other dude win because she felt bad for him. So I was like, all right, whatever. At least I could go home knowing I won. I'm the real president. I'm sorry, it sounded like Trump. All right. So the reality is, whenever it came to it and came down to it, whenever I said it's not about me, you know, or what y'all can do for me, it's but what I can do for you as president, was a famous line from JFK, and whenever the Father was reminding me of being humble, that's where it came from. That's one of my favorite historical quotes. It's not what you can do for me as president, it's what I can do for you. With his wonderful voice. But I love y'all, and that was a lesson on names about how even the names can reflect the Father's character. and his provision, his care for us, his love for us, and consideration. And it has all to do with appreciating family. Because these names deserve to be looked into this deeply, to be respected this deeply. These are our ancestors. And for the sake of not telling y'all I'm closing for a third time, Shabbat Shalom, y'all. I love y'all.